No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
All righty. Welcome back to another Wisco Fanatics Wednesday episode. We are live today on Thursday with the Christmas holiday being on a Wednesday this week. So welcome, everybody, to Wisco Fanatics Thursday. Hope everybody had a good Christmas, had a good holiday. Today, we have a handful of basketball games to go through. We're going to go through the Badgers win against Detroit Mercy, and then the Bucks had a 2-1 week against the Cavs, the Wizards, and the Bulls. So we're going to go through those and recap all of those, and here we go.
Welcome to another live episode of the Wisco Fanatics Show, where we discuss the Packers, Bucks, Brewers, Badgers football, and basketball from an optimistic perspective. Wisco Fanatics is brought to you by Cardboard Legacy, Wisconsin's most complete sports card shop. Buy, sell, grade, and consign all at their location in Oshkosh.
Alrighty, so we are going to start with just a little bit of kind of personal news, also kind of show-related. Jake and I both got our requests approved today for our Senior Bowl credentials, so we are officially approved to attend the Senior Bowl. So we're going to be starting to put some stuff together for that as January goes on, because that'll be at the end of January that trip will be. So very excited to be returning to the Senior Bowl. This will be my second year. This will be Jake's first year going. And we're hoping maybe next year to get Mike going along with us as well, so we can keep interviewing more and more college players that are heading to the NFL. Starting today, we're talking all basketball, and we're going to start with Badgers basketball against Detroit Mercy. So, Mike, why don't you tell me what you saw from the guards on Sunday afternoon?
Yeah, quick shout out, guys. What was the how many followers are you at now again? You just hit another.
Yeah. I didn't even mention that. Also, we are over 8,000 now. So,
bravo!
Nice call, Mike.
Yes, hey, no problem. Had to get it out there. So,
nice.
Yeah,
call,
as Tyler said, hope everyone had a great holiday. Is having a great holiday. Yeah. As for this game against Detroit, it was pretty low key for the most part. Again, the story of this is back-to-back games. Now the story of the day, we're the bigs, again, putting it together a good performance. I'll let you guys go in detail on that. But as for the guards strictly, you know, it was Jack Janicki's day in terms of the guards. I think this was his best game that he's had all year. 13 minutes, 5 points, 3 rebounds, and 3 blocks. That was very, very impressive on his end. You know, I mentioned it before on this podcast that he belongs out on the floor, in my view. He's a very good piece to the puzzle, I guess you could say, for this team. He's not going to be the leading scorer by any means. I don't expect him to for his time here, but he fits in like a glove in terms of the scheme and what the Badgers want to do on both sides of the court. So shout out to Jack Janicki. I think he had his best game of the year. Kamari McGee, caught a little slow for him, but he did have a nice little sequence during this game. It was 14 minutes, 3 points, five rebounds, which is a great for him. One assist and 2 steals. In the second half was when he really started to come through. He had a nice little sequence when he had back-to-back steals. The first one leading to an assist, and then the second leading to an and one on his end. So, yeah, decent day for him. I guess the concern for me going forward was kind of seeing the streakiness of Max Klusman again with his shooting. You know, it's something that he definitely needs to work on as we head into conference play. He did go the day without scoring, 0-5 shooting, 2 rebounds, 2 assists. So, yeah, he definitely has to work on that. One thing I would say for Badgers fans, I mean, we got to see obviously a lot of bench players play, including the highly coveted recruit Daniel Freitag. I would tell fans right now, don't get discouraged that he still hasn't been playing that much or hasn't gotten that groove yet, I guess. He did get 3 minutes, 0-3 shooting. I did find a way to get 4 personal fouls. But, you know, he was sitting on the bench most of the game, not really warm. But, I mean, Coach Gard has said it a couple times, too, that he's just not ready yet in terms of the game's just a tad bit too fast for him. But you know what? That's fine. In terms of, well, who's ahead of him now, I think this could potentially set him up perfectly for next season. And there could be a time where we might need him later on in the year, right? So I just hopefully fans don't get too discouraged at this point that we're not seeing much of him yet. As far as, you know, besides Klesman, Jack Nicky, who I just mentioned, he's finding a nice role for this team. Kamari McGee having an incredible year, I feel like, being one of the first guys off the bench. So I would say going into conference play, again, the bigs are looking great going into it. I'll let you guys talk about that. But my biggest concern, I guess, is Max Klesman with his streaky shooting. We're going to need him sooner rather than later, I feel like. This team's going to be by committee, and I do know there's going to be a point where Max is going to be called upon to, whether it's close out a game or having one of those big games similar to Marquette, for example, where that's the one thing that we're going to need him for a couple games going forward, and something to that I will for sure look out for beyond the guard side of things as we head into conference play. So it's my takeaway.
Yeah, I agree on Klesman especially. And I think as far as his shot selection goes, get yourself a couple layups, see the ball go through, get to the free throw line, see the ball go through before, you know, we're hoisting up one dribble off of a screen threes with 18 seconds on the shot clock, that kind of thing. I said it to you guys, you know, Max Klesman never saw a shot he didn't like, and it was pretty clear on Sunday. As for the wings, looking at John Blackwell, he hit his first three off of a driving kick by, I believe it was, Max Klesman. That's just one of those things where if Klesman can identify in the first half of a game that he's not scoring well, he can still impact winning basketball games.
Mm-hmm.
He's still a good defender. He's tough. He's a first-to-the-floor type player, and he's a guy that can create for his teammates. So that's something that I think we could look for with Klesman as well. Blackwell finished with 12 points, 6 rebounds, 3 of them offensive. He continues to be not just a guy who can drive to the basket, but a guy who, when shots are going up, can rebound as a wing, as a guard, and get some second chance points for the Badgers. He's done it throughout the year. I really like that part of his game that I don't think we saw very much last season. Looking at John Tanjay, he got himself to the free throw line for 2 points, and the next possession knocked down a 3. That's the kind of stuff I'd like to see from Klesman. Tanjay finished with 9 points, all in the first half. Didn't really need much from him. He's another guy, like Mike was just saying, that later on in the season will be counted on. Looking at it, between Tanjay and Blackwell, they had 8 of the Badgers' 13 assists and only 2 turnovers. So those two things combining make me very happy. Tanjay had both. John Blackwell had 0 turnovers. And then between those two, they were a combined 7 of 7 at the free throw line. So before I give any other takeaways, I'll let Jake talk about the bigs.
Yeah, so back-to-back games from the big men, Crowell and Winter leading the Badgers in scoring. So when you think about how the season has gone, it started off very fast pace, getting to the free throw line. They're still the number one free throw shooting team in the country, so that's a great sign. We can always lean on that, especially in late games. We know that we can know how to close it out. We play defense and we hit free throws, right? That's 2 things you need. And now – for the last couple of weeks, I feel like the pace has kind of slowed down a little bit, especially since they've been trying to get Crowell into the offense a little bit more after he was publicly criticized by his head coach for lack of rebounding and physicality. So the last couple of games, they've been a little bit more out of the post, and it's kind of slowed things down a little bit. And I think that may have affected the rhythms of Tanjay and Klesman and Blackwell a little bit. But, you know, it's kind of good for me to know, and this is what I take away from it, that the Badgers can win basketball games in different ways. You know, we look at at that in all of our teams. You know, Brewers winning games by not hitting home runs and just stealing bases, and Packers winning the game by throwing the ball and running the ball. And there's just different ways. You know, Bucks can hit a lot of threes. Bucks can play defense. Same thing with the Badgers. Badgers play pretty good, consistent defense. Now they've shown that they can run their offense through the big men, and they also shown that they can run with teams. I mean, they ran with Arizona all night. Mm-hmm. So that's the positive takeaway that I take from it. It's a good sign. Nolan Winter, though, this guy is turning into the player that we want. He's on the exact trajectory that every Badgers fan should want. 18 points, 11 rebounds, one block. His second career double-double, his first career double-double came against UCF earlier this year. Of those 11 rebounds, five of them came on the offensive end of the floor. So that's a really good thing, being aggressive on the offensive boards, aggressive on the defensive boards. Steven Crowell, 7 for 10 from the field, 0 for 3 from 3. But he's shooting the three. He is presuming himself to be a threat. That is all we have been asking for. So it
feels like 2 years now.
Yeah, for 2 years now. They did a really nice job. Quick shout out to Amos. I know that he only had 4 points and a rebound, but he always comes in, shows good energy, in my opinion. Again, he's still a little bit too small, but that doesn't stop him from competing. And Carter Gilmore went scoreless in this game, but he only played 11 minutes. And you know what? I never have to question his effort, so I'll never get on him too much. Shout out to Crowell. As he was a big part of a 14-0 run that ended the first half. They really kind of put this game out of reach for Detroit Mercer. He had 7 points in those 14. So good job by Big Steve there getting some points. In terms of how the Badgers big men affected this game, we absolutely dominated them on the boards. The Badgers had 34 defensive rebounds. Detroit had 34 rebounds total. Badgers ended the game with 50 total rebounds. We ended the game with 36 points in the paint, and Detroit had 14 points in the paint. So if you want to know where the discrepancy was in this game, it was in the paint. The Badgers were way more physical rebounding the ball, defending the paint, and finishing in the paint. So good job by everybody involved here. They did a nice job. They held Detroit Mercer to 18 on 58 on two-point attempts in this game. So that's very good defense by the Wisconsin Badgers.
Wow. This was another game where the Badgers kind of got off to a slow start, and they overcame that by getting to the rim. Mm-hmm. That's something where it opens up the driving kick for other players. The only thing that I would like to see added into that is some more off-ball movement. It seems like the Badgers kind of run a lot of three-man game offensively, and then they just have one guy parked on the opposite wing and one guy parked in the opposite corner. I'd like to see a little bit more off-ball movement, even if it's just those two guys, you know, going back and forth, setting screens for each other, or just occasionally diving to the rim. Mm. But just keep those two moving from wing to corner to block and everywhere in between.
I agree.
I will say the first half, right before halftime, fouling Detroit Mercy a bunch of times so that they had no opportunity to get any sort of rhythm on a good shot. It's just good coaching awareness by Greg Gard. So I'll give that credit where it's due. And then the second half, the defense did a really good job of leading to offense. The thing I think the Badgers do arguably the best defensively besides rotations is all of them, literally all of them, do a great job of staying vertical and not ending like this, keeping the palms out and not, you know, leaning over the top. Mm-hmm. Palms up, show the ref your palms, you're not going to get called for fouls, whether it's defending the dribble or defending shots. So I think all of them do a really, really good job of staying vertical. Like Mike said, kind of emptied the bench with about 8 minutes left in the game. They were up by 29 points at that point. Jake brought up the rebounding, and then I just wanted to give credit to the Badgers for being 17 of 19 at the free throw line. So
I wanted to call John Blackwell too. I mean, he had zero turnovers. I think that's actually big. Because he's definitely had those streaky games a couple times this year where he has not taken care of the ball. I thought him going a full game without a turnover is big time, especially now that he's certified himself basically as the one guard to at least start the game, right? So the fact that he was able to take care of the ball and go a game without even committing a turnover, I think speaks volumes. And I also want to call it Amos. Actually, there was a sequence where when they run their offense, he catches the ball usually on the left-hand wing side. He has no problem jacking up that three. Well, there's a sequence in the second half where, okay, the defender was thinking that like immediately. He thought he was going to put it up. Amos caught him on his feet, and then he drove right by him and got an easy bucket to the hole. We haven't seen that from him yet this year. So I thought that was great awareness on Amos's part with not just catching on the wing and jacking up the three and just seeing where his defender was. He kind of didn't – it wasn't a shot fake, but he saw that he was on like the back weight of his feet and just drove right by him and got a quick, easy layup. That just popped right in my head, and that was a play that I actually really loved on his end just because of the awareness. So wanted to call that out real quick.
I like it. Anything else you guys want to say on this Badger game?
Big Ten play is upon us, boys. We got a – going to have a tough slate, but I will say I think the Big Ten is also wide open. Oh, yeah. I know we're down 0-2 right now, but yeah, I don't see any clear-cut favorites as of right now. So it'll be an interesting journey for these next 3 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Well, Mike, we'll bid adieu to you for about 13 days now. The Badgers do not have any games between now and next Wednesday. No games actually until next Friday night when they play on January 3rd. Yeah, that's their next game. So
good for my health.
Yeah, no Badger basketball next week. So Mike gets a bye next week.
Much needed one.
All righty, Mike, take care. And we will talk to you in 2 weeks. I will obviously be in touch before then. But yeah, we will see you back on the show then.
Later.
Later, buddy.
All right. So we have now 3 Milwaukee Bucks games to discuss. And really interesting week, in my opinion. So you get the kind of hangover game against the Cavs. You can have the conversation. Oh, the Bucks have the Cavs number. Haven't played them with our roster healthy.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to be like, oh well, the Bucks can't beat the Cavaliers in a 7-game series. They played them 3 times. Twice they didn't have Giannis, and once they didn't have Damian Lillard. So, you know. Whatever, it is what it is. Obviously, this is the first time Chris Middleton played against the Cavaliers. So let's start with this Cavaliers game, and what's that up to you?
Yeah, so actually I'm going to start with no Damian Lillard because I believe that there's context to be had in this situation, and I would like to provide it. No Damian Lillard, you lose more than people really realize, I think. He's a true point guard, somebody who can handle the ball in all situations. He's faced double teams, full court pressures. He's been in every single pressure cooker situation that you can put yourself in basketball. So you have somebody that can, you know, take that stress of handling the ball full court. He can create for others, 3-point shots, dunks, doesn't matter. He puts a lot of pressure on you by driving, a lot more pressure than people realize, a lot more pressure than I ever realized until he was a Milwaukee Buck. Now, there were games where I watched a lot of Damian Lillard. He's been in the league for a long time, been good for a long time. I didn't realize how good of a driver he was. I didn't
really like catch on to how much gravity he has, and this is a word that I know we've used before, until the bubble. That was when I really like him and Jamal Murray. Like that was some of my favorite basketball non-Bucks to watch ever.
Yeah,
was the bubble. And I just want to jump in on Damian Lillard specifically before I let you continue.
Mm-hmm.
Because that word gravity, as much as I like Ryan Rollins, who had 9 points, 2 assists, 3 steals in 12 minutes, Ryan Rollins just does not have the gravity that Damian Lillard has.
Yeah.
It shouldn't come as a shock to anybody. But when, like you are saying, when you're playing without Damian Lillard, that is something that now all 4 other players – get to guard their guys a little more closely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100% agree. Obviously stretches the floor, and 2 things that I don't think he gets enough credit for: toughness and leadership. Those are 2 things that I don't think Dame gets enough credit for. So I just wanted to give Dame his flowers. And I'm just going to say with no true point guard, it was very evident early in this game. The Cavs knew that we didn't really have a point guard. It's not that we didn't have people who could shoot. We have plenty of people who could shoot. We have Giannis who could drive to the rim. We got people who could play defense. We got a good coach. But in the NBA, you need a point guard. You need a guy who's going to set all the pieces in the right spot and make it work. And Dame has done a tremendous job of that. So credit to him. People are all giving credit to Giannis, and rightfully so. Giannis is tremendous. But on this turnaround as well, I think people need to start giving Dame more credit for the play style that he's brought as well. Going into the breakdown, Giannis was really superhuman in this game. Just
even starting slow.
He started
2 for 6 and 1 for 4 at the free throw line.
But very pedestrian from the rest of the starters, obviously. Still have Chris on the bench. Bobby's on the bench. So those are two of your, you know, four best players in this game without Damian Lillard. Giannis 33-14-3, just tremendous stuff. AJ Green and Andre Jackson Jr., those guys are starters in this game, and they combined 0 for 9 from the field and 0 for 7 from 3. I mean, you're not going to win many games that way. So, I mean, yeah. I'm not trying to, like, drag them down or say anything bad, but it's just – it is what it is, right?
Those two are probably the top two players, arguably maybe Torian Prince, that are going to get the most open looks by playing alongside Giannis and Dame.
100%, especially Andre Jackson Jr. They usually use a guy, a big man, so he can kind of play in the paint and then maybe rotate over to Andre Jackson and maybe give a late contest on his three-pointer. Yeah. But if he starts hitting corner and top of the key three-pointers, I mean, oh, man, this Bucks offense is really going to take off.
Yeah.
In terms of bench production, 53 points, 19 rebounds, 12 assists, 21 of 44 from the field, 6 of 13 from three. So, I mean, nothing crazy. Again, Bobby and you know, Gary Trent Jr. is on the bench. Chris Middleton's on the bench. So in terms of driving, we had 18 points. Giannis had 8 of those points. He shot 50%. That's another thing where if Damian Lillard is in there, he's going to get more open space, right? Catch and shoot, we had 27 points there. Not super efficient in that area. Again, I think directly affected by not having another playmaker. Chris Middleton is there. He is a very underrated playmaker, but his legs aren't all the way there, and you can just tell when you watch him play.
Yep.
Pull-up game, 21 points. Bobby Portis, 2 points on pull-ups. He shot 25% on pull-ups. I love Bobby. I'll be the leader of the Bobby fan club. I really don't give a shit. Bad games, good games, doesn't matter. I love Bobby Portis. I love me some Bobby Portis. Please get rid of that part of his game.
Yeah.
That is the biggest Achilles heel to Bobby Portis's basketball game. He's good on catch and shoots. He's good when you drop it down to him in the paint, he can finish. He's good. He's decent on the drive, actually. He's pretty good on post-ups at times. But
I like his face up game is awesome.
And then he faces up, and then he sits there for 2 seconds and thinks about it, and then he shoots it. It's like, that's terrible offense, Bobby. And I love you very much, but that's terrible offense. Just get rid of that part of your game, and you'll honestly be a freaking monster.
Much more efficient.
Yeah.
My other gripe with Bobby is you got to be a little bit smarter on defense. Stepping up on Donovan Mitchell as if he's not going to drive to the basket. If you close out super high with your left foot forward and give him the lane, that, and then there's no reason to fly past Dean Wade.
Yeah.
There's no reason. That's the guy you can give the high close out to.
Yeah,
because if he's going to try to drive by you, Bobby, I trust you to be able to get back in front of Dean Wade. That's not the guy you need to fly by and leave wide open.
Yeah, Donovan Mitchell's a tough cover. He's super quick. He could jump high, and he's a pretty good shooter, but yeah, I agree. Last thing I'll say is points in the paint. We had 16. Bucks, I think, personally did a pretty nice job driving to the paint and finding people. People were available in the paint. So Damian Lillard's absence was realized. That's the main thing that I took away from this game.
Yeah. And I'll throw another thing out there on missing Dame. Brad said, I think he thinks about that six-man award too much. Let the game come to you. Absolutely let the game come to you, Brad. I've mentioned this a handful of times this season, that the basketball finds energy.
Yeah.
And Bobby Portis is made of pure energy. He doesn't need to force anything. The way that the Bucks play, he doesn't have to force anything. He can let everything come to him, and he will still get 6 to 10 shots a game by just letting the ball find him, letting the ball find the energy, letting the ball find the open guy. So I've said that, and I agree with you. Let the game come to him.
Mm-hmm.
On the subject of missing Dame, I think the three-point shooting is part of another thing that the Bucks missed. The Bucks were 10 of 27, 37%. That's not bad. Brook Lopez was the only player to make more than one three-pointer.
Yep.
The team did shoot a decent percentage, but like I said last week, I'd like them to be around 40 attempts a game. Dame being out obviously lowers the amount that they're going to shoot. If you take out Ajax and AJ Green, the rest of the team was 10 for 20. So again, decent percentages. Just with Dame in there, that number is going to go up. Turnovers, the Bucks had 20. That's high. Yeah. Five of them by Giannis, four by Torian Prince. Marjan managed three turnovers in 12 minutes. That's tough. The Cavs turned that into 22 points. That's a big chunk of points right there. I will say the Bucks started okay on defense, a little rough on offense, and then the Cavaliers kind of started hitting, and the Bucks just couldn't really keep up with O'Dane. And again, going back to Ajax and AJ, not saying anything bad about them, except for this game specifically was not their best. I'm still going to trust them completely going forward.
Mm-hmm.
But 0 for 9 from the field and 0 for 7 from the three-point line.
Yeah.
So that's tough. That's tough to win games like that. That's why, you know, the NBA has a 7-game series instead of a, you know, a 1-game playoff like the NFL does.
Mm-hmm.
So you can overcome stuff like that in a 7-game series. Just in a singular game once in a while, it's going to be tough to overcome. I will say, still on Chris Middleton, I cannot understand Chris Middleton haters at this point. Like, say what you will about his health, you know, he's been available the last two playoff runs and been arguably the best player.
It's true.
How many times do you need professional basketball players to say the regular season doesn't matter? They want to get to the playoffs healthy.
Yeah.
Then you have a guy who's going to give you good numbers and be healthy in the playoffs. And you're like, nah, I'd rather have CJ McCollum. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. I wasn't going to touch that conversation because that's not even close, in my opinion.
Not even remotely close. So this game, I get that it wasn't his most efficient game. He was 5 for 12 from the field, 1 for 2 from 3, 3 for 5 from the free throw line. Not his best efficiency, but Jake talked about it. Legs still not quite there yet. They're mm-hmm. getting there, definitely mm-hmm. getting there.
Mm-hmm.
But calling him washed and useless is just stupid. He scored 14 points in 19 minutes and had 3 rebounds and 3 assists.
Mm-hmm.
Wait till good. I give you his per 36 numbers after the Bulls game.
He's been pretty good actually last week.
I mean, let's go to the Wizards game and we'll just keep talking. Chris Middleton got into the starting lineup for this game, playing without Giannis and without Dame. Mm-hmm. So Ryan Rollins and Bobby Portis jumped into the starting lineup, and Torian Prince went to the bench. So Chris Middleton in the first quarter, 7 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists. 11 points in the third quarter. He finished the game with 18 points, 6 rebounds, 8 assists, and a steal with only 1 turnover in under 24 minutes.
Can I add a little bit more context to the 11 points in the third quarter?
Sure.
So the Bucks, when he had his 11 points in the third quarter, he had 11 of the 15 points when the Bucks went on a 15-2 run to put the game at 80-58. He made 3 of his 4 three-pointers, and he had a layup in that time. That's the explosion that Chris Middleton can give you. When that's the third wheel next to Giannis and Dame, that should scare you.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. That should scare you.
Chris Middleton was plus 31.
Yeah, he was really good versus the Wizards.
Damn, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Plus 31 in less than 24 minutes is wild.
Yeah, it is.
But he's washed and useless, and we should trade him for CJ McCollum.
I would never trade him for CJ McCollum. That's just disrespectful.
Yeah. Don't even mention them in the same conversation anymore. The Bucks were better from the three-point line than they were from the field in the fourth quarter, which I thought was kind of funny. They were 6 of 15 from the three-point line in the fourth quarter. They were 9 of 23 from the field, so they were 40% from the three-point line and 39.1% from the field. I thought that was kind of funny. To me, that just kind of told me that they were coasting at that point. Mm-hmm. Just overall, you know, the three-point shooting, 20 of 48, 41.7%. Like I said, around 40 is kind of that sweet spot. But if you're hitting, I'm down to let them fly. You know, Bob Bobby Portis was 6 for 9. Chris Middleton was 4 for 6. If you're hitting them, heat check until they don't go in.
Mm-hmm.
Turnovers, only 11, which is very good. Points off turnovers, only 10, also very good. I can absolutely live with that all the time. Mm-hmm. The other thing with Bobby Portis, who was inserted in the starting lineup for Giannis, and Brad can be happy about this, he did not force things this game.
No.
And what do you know? Goes off for 34 points, 10 rebounds, and a career-high 8 assists. Bobby Portis was fantastic by just letting the game come to him. 14 of 21 from the field, 6 for 9 from the three-point line, and not forcing shots. That is when we have the best version of Bobby Portis, when he is just playing within his game and not trying to do more than is expected of him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Bobby, just come in and be yourself. That's all we need. And that's what we love about him.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the defense, mainly in the second quarter, Torian Prince and A.J. Green stepped it up. They were locked in, even when A.J. Green got hit in the face.
Yeah, which was – how is that not a flat? I understand it was just a regular basketball move, but, dog, he's bleeding.
Yeah, a hit in the face. The Bucks held the Wizards to 14 points, 1 for 10 from the three-point line. Only 22 points in the third quarter. Did a good job winning the second and third quarter, 50 to 36. The Wizards scored 36 points in the second and third quarter. That equals the amount of points they had in the first quarter.
Yeah, this
the
was
Bucks were locked in defensively.
Mm-hmm.
In that first quarter, Jordan Poole had 16 points. In the second and third quarter, he was 1 for 6 from the field, 1 for 3 from the three-point line, had 4 points. Bucks locked in defensively. The Wizards against Chris Middleton were 3 for 10 from the field. The Wizards against Ajax were 1 for 5 from the field, and Jordan Poole against Ajax was 1 for 4 with 3 turnovers.
Dude, Ajax is that guy. Hey, that guy's on fire. Go bother him now.
The Bucks, they locked in after that first quarter, and when we're talking about playing games without Dame and Giannis, seeing them lock in that hard, I get it's the Wizards, but seeing them lock in that hard without their top two players and their third option being on a minutes restriction, that to me was still impressive. So what stood out to you from the Wizards game?
Yeah, so I'm going to continue this conversation about Bobby Portis. He had 23 points in the first half. He was 10 of 12 from the field, 3 of 5 on 3 in the first half. And, you know, if we just go, let's go right to the efficiency, right? So driving, obviously no Giannis. Giannis is the biggest threat to drive, and no Dame as well. That's also a big threat to break down the defense. Bucks had 12 points. Chris Middleton had 2 points. Ryan Rollins had 2 points. Ryan Rollins shot 33% on drives. Chris Middleton shot 20%. So they got to try. They got to try to get to the rim, but they just didn't finish. And you know what? It is what it is, because then when you get to the catch and shoot, their ability to continue to try to drive opened up a lot of stuff for everybody, right? The Bucks on catch and shoot scored 48 points. Bobby Portis had 22 of the 48. He shot 66.7% on catch and shoot opportunities in this game. He was absolutely on fire. And when you were talking about Bobby, I was like, yeah, he was letting the game come to him. So 22 from catch and shoots, I said. You go to the paint, the Bucks had 14 points. Bobby had 8 of the 14. He shot 100% on paint touches. So you're talking about 30 of his 34 on efficient shots. Literally just be a catch and shoot. Literally just play like Brook Lopez. Literally just play like Brook Lopez. I just came to that conclusion right now. Just be Brook Lopez. You don't have to be the defensive player of the year, Brook Lopez, because you still have Giannis there, and the style of defense that the Bucks play with, they're switching and showing on weak side a little bit harder than they have in the past, allows us to hide guys like Bobby Portis at times.
Right.
But you still have to contest shots. But literally, if you just be a catch-and-shoot guy and, you know, finish in the paint, I'm not going to be upset.
You're going to score 16 points a game just doing that stuff.
Agreed. And I want to give some credit to Chris Middleton. It's going to be back-to-back games of me doing this. Now, I told everybody that Damian Lillard, when he's going, pull-up game is his game. He cooks from the pull-up game because he can drive. He could pull up from deep. He could pull up from mid-range. That's the same thing with Chris Middleton. And I was like, when Chris Middleton comes back, I know I said this about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago now. When Middleton is back, the Bucks are going to have a game where they might score 50 from the pull-up, dude. They literally might. They had 28 in this game, and Middleton had 13 of them. He shot 62.5% on pull-ups.
Damn!
Yeah.
That's fucking awesome.
I'm telling you, they're going to have a game because Giannis makes them. Bobby's going to shoot them, even though I don't want him to. And, I mean, they might have a game where they score 50. Chris Middleton from the pull-up game was absolutely phenomenal. So, shout-out to him. That's awesome. That's the tough shot-making, you know, between him and Dame. The tough shot-making is at an elite tier, in my opinion.
I have a visual aid when we get to the Bulls game.
Oh, I'm ready for that. Yeah, let's go to the Bulls game, man. I'm ready.
All right. So, you want to start with the visual aid and talk about Chris?
Yeah, go for it, dude.
All right. I'll pull it up. So, this is – I literally titled this Chris giving Io that work. This is just Chris Middleton getting an isolation against Io Dosunmu and just giving him work.
Bro, that's what I'm talking about.
How do you defend that?
You just say, good shot.
You're like, Chris Middleton is 6'7", 6'8". If you're not 6'10", there's nothing you can do against that.
I don't know if that even matters, dude, because then he can – if you're taller, he's going to bring you to a back down, or he's going to pull it back and he's going to give you the tween-tween pull-up from three, and then you're just really screwed. I mean, let's call it what it is.
This is like – this is – you know, when there's going to be times when Giannis and Dame are both on the bench.
Yeah.
And then the Bucks are going to put this guy in and be like, here, have fun trying to stop this in the half court. This is the third best scorer on the team.
Yeah. I'm real excited for all of them to get this shit going, man.
Yeah.
It's gonna be nasty.
So this all in 23 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
21 points, 9 of 15 from the field, 60%, 3 of 5 from 3, 60%. 5 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, and he did have 4 turnovers. More on that later because we're going to have a conversation. In 23 minutes of game time,
mm-hmm.
You want to know you want to know Chris Middleton's per 36 numbers?
Yeah, tell me.
Chris Middleton per 36 minutes right now in 7 games, 2 starts, playing on a minutes restriction, 19.3 points, 6.2 rebounds, 9.3 assists, and 1.9 steals.
So our third best player is averaging 19, 6, 9, and 1 steal?
Almost 2 steals. It's closer to 2 steals. So it's essentially averaging 19, 6, 9, and 2.
That's our third best player? Damn.
You can't tell me that you couldn't think of 6 teams right now that he would instantly be their best player?
Oh, easily. The only team that could stop the Bucks
in 23 minutes, is that good?
The only team that can stop the Bucks at full strength is the Celtics. That's it. That's the only answer. I'm being serious.
I'm dead serious.
At full strength, if everybody's playing the best basketball, the Celtics are still the best team, as much as that pains me to say, but it's true. But it'd be a hard argument for me to say that the Bucks wouldn't be the second best.
There's a very, very possible scenario where the Eastern Conference Finals, potentially being the Bucks-Celtics, ends up being more entertaining than the Finals.
I could absolutely see that. I think the Bucks and Celtics could absolutely wipe the floor with any team from the West. OKC's really good, but I feel like OKC's in that portion of their franchise right now, like they were with KD, Russ, and Harden, where when they made it to the finals, they were a little wet behind the ears, and they got mopped up by a team that had experience. Yeah. If they go against a Celtics or a Bucks, a team with experience, probably going to mop the floor with them in the finals.
Yeah, probably still saw that in the Cup finals, too, but
yeah.
Yeah. All right. What stood out to you from this Bulls game before I give the rest of my takeaways?
Yeah, the thing that first thing I'm going to give credit to Andre Jackson Jr. and Ryan Rollins. Both those guys did a really nice job helping on the boards. They both ended the game with 5 rebounds. So without Giannis, definitely going to need help on the boards. Bobby Portis did a nice job as well, grabbing 13 himself. Chris Middleton grabbed 5. 21-5-5 is just filthy, dude. He's a monster at full strength
in 23 minutes.
Yeah. Brooke Lopez and Chris Middleton tied for the leading scorer in this game. Both had 21 points. Bobby Portis had 19 himself. The bench scored 37, 15, and 10. So nice contribution from the bench. They were passing the ball, rebounding the ball a little bit. The shooting percentage is not good overall for the bench, but Torian Prince had a pretty bad game. So yeah. they went 7-20. They went 7-20 from the 3-point line. If you take out Torian Prince, they're 7-15. That's a very good percentage.
If you take out AJ Green, they would be 6-10.
Yeah. So I mean, that's pretty good. Chris Middleton had a season high in points in back-to-back games, so that's a very good thing. Merry Christmas to you as well, Matthew. Our Packer show will be tomorrow night, since that's usually where we see you, but glad to see you on a Wednesday show.
Tomorrow night
at 8 o'clock. It'll be a full house again, so we will see you there. We're gonna have the recap and the preview for the Vikings game, so we'll see you there at 8 o'clock. But you can stick around and hear about the Bucks as well. More than welcome. In terms of driving, Bucks scored 20 points. Six different players contributed to this. My favorite thing of all notes is when I'm looking at when I'm centering in on a certain statistic and I see a bunch of names. Like I do the pass rush for the Packer shows. Mm-hmm. And when I see a bunch of people in the hurries, bunch of people in the quarterback hits, I get really excited because I'm like, ooh, yeah, dude, we are cooking, dude. I love that so much. In terms of catch and shoots, six players contributed to this as well. We had 41 points on catch and shoots. Bobby Portis left a few out there, but he still took some good shots. So I'm not going to get on him about it because he took good shots, but he left a few out there where I was like, dude, we really could have blew the doors off the Chicago Bulls. Not that winning 112-91 isn't a nice thing.
Right.
Pull-up game again, dude. And this makes me feel so smart, man, because Chris Middleton, again, was dominant from the pull-up game. 17 points. Tyler was – nice enough to bring us a visual aid on things that he does to people that makes them feel bad about themselves playing basketball. 58.3% on the pull-up game. That's Middleton, man. He's a monster from the mid-range. And I wrote down again, get Bobby away from pull-up jumpers. He had 2 points again in this game on 20% field goals. Bobby, seriously, man, just get rid of the damn pull-up game. I know, like, every once in a while, he can make a tough shot. He made some tough shots. I remember specifically last year against some higher opponents when the Bucks weren't playing very good, like against the Celtics. He made some tough pull-ups, but they're a dime a dozen at this point, man. And they just don't fit into the offense the way they used to with Damian Lillard and not Jrue Holiday. It's just a different kind of offense. So just get this portion of your game out of there, man. Yeah. It's nice to have it in the tool belt, but what we need you to use more out of the tool belt is – the spot-up shooting, the in-rhythm three-pointers, and the paint. That's what we need from Bobby Portis. So just get him away from that, and everything will be fine. I had no other complaints about this game. I thought everything else was good.
Yeah. So you mentioned the point differential, the 112-91. The Bucks have held four of their last five opponents under 102 and five of their last six under 110.
Damn, that's pretty good, actually, in today's age.
It really is, especially with the amount of points that the Bucks can and have scored in that same time period. Yeah. Look at the three-point line in this game. They were 18 of 43. That's 41.9%. Beautiful. Replicate that all the time. The reason I brought up AJ Green and Torian Prince being 1 for 10 from the three-point line is to really show that the fact that the rest of the team picked them up.
Mm-hmm.
So Brooke Lopez was 3 for 6. Chris Middleton was 3 for 5. Ryan Rollins was 2 for 3. DeLon Wright was 2 for 4. Gary Trent Jr. was 4 for 6. So those guys just picked each other up, and that's what having so many shooters around the core of the team can do.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you the opportunity of not having to rely on only one shooter, mm-hmm. and it gives opportunity for other guys to pick those guys up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is something I wanted to talk about with – specifically with Chris Middleton's turnovers. So he started this game, I believe, 1 for 3 from the field, and he had a couple early turnovers. And like clockwork, you see first quarter posts being like, Middleton's trash, get rid of him, cut him, trade him, whatever. And I just wanted to bring up that people attach way too much significance to small mistakes,
mm-hmm.
like turnovers here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Those are not reasons to be trading guys, drastically cutting minutes. things like that, based on just a couple turnovers here and there. It's a thing where if you watch how the other players on the team react to when guys have turnovers. Because it's really easy to look at a box score and be like, oh, Chris Middleton had four turnovers. You look at one he threw to Gary Trent Jr., who was wide open, would have had a great look at a three. He was 4 for 6 on threes for the night. Just pass was just low. Gary Trent Jr. missed it. It went between his legs. That counts as a turnover. What did Chris Middleton and Gary Trent Jr. do?
Yep.
Because they know what they're trying to do. It's a play of effort. It's not like Chris dribbling the ball off his leg or throwing the ball, you know, down the baseline to nobody that's there. It's like, you just gotta like just calm the fuck down on some stuff.
Yeah.
These are little things that people are attaching way too much weight to.
Mm-hmm.
The guys on the floor understand what their teammate was trying to do. They high five and they move on to the next play. Kevin Durant just had an interview with Kay Adams talking about how you are able to like take care of your mentals when you're playing the game when something goes wrong. Talking about just move on to the next play. Just move on.
That's pretty simple.
Especially for something small, like a turnover or two in the first quarter of a game against the Bulls in December. It's not game 7 of the finals with 5 seconds on the clock and a tie game. It's not that serious.
I mean, even then, in the finals,
find his teammate for an open three. It's not that serious.
Yeah, I agree.
They'll clean it up. These guys are better than that. Obviously, I just gave you Chris Middleton's per 36 minute stats, and it's not. I'm only using this to push a Chris Middleton thing. I'm using Chris Middleton as an example of letting small stuff go once in a while because it's not that serious.
Mm-hmm.
The Bucks had 13 turnovers total. It's not terrible. It's kind of in that gray area where I'm okay. They allowed 13 mm-hmm. points off turnovers. That's also not terrible. The mm-hmm. the last thing that I wanted to point out with this game is I'm going to preface this again by saying that I'm not bringing this up from a place of trying to bring him down for something that he can't do. I'm going to use this as an example of a way that a player can go to the next level. And I'm talking about Andre Jackson Jr. He's got a little bit to learn yet on team defense.
Mm-hmm.
He's fantastic on ball defense. And I would add Ryan Rollins to this conversation a little bit as well. Because people are kind of starting to fall in love with Ryan Rollins, what he can do offensively outside of what we've talked about, which is like full court dribbling when he's being pressured. That's something he needs to improve on. But both of these guys, really good on ball defenders. And I'll give Ryan Rollins a little bit of a boost as well, and Ajax. They're both pretty good transition defenders.
That's fair.
Talking half court, 5-on-5 team defense. There's some things to learn for them on being on top of their rotations. There was one play where I saw specifically where Ajax went to rotate to a guy in the corner and his guy was supposed to be rotating to the wing, and Brook Lopez ran to the guy to the corner and Ajax was supposed to cover the guy on the wing and they allowed an open three. That's one super small example.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those things where Ajax can go to the next level by becoming a better team defender in addition to being a fantastic on-ball defender. So right now, I trust Ajax, anybody 1 through 3. Anybody. With Giannis and Brook, he doesn't really have to defend bigs as much, but eventually Brook Lopez is going to retire. Yep. And Ajax, even defending 1 through 4, can help keep Giannis's window open longer.
Yeah.
That'll be another next level thing for him. Again, I'm not trying to say that Ajax needs to play less because he doesn't understand these things. If anything, he should be playing more so that he can get more experience with these things.
Mm-hmm.
But the way for Ajax to take his defense even further to the next level is to work on team defense.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Last thing. I just grabbed another visual aid. Why doesn't Brook Lopez get more rebounds? Mm. He's 7 feet tall. Why doesn't he get rebounds? That counts as a rebound for Bobby Portis. He does this all the time. He's got a guy on his back. Instead of trying to grab the ball with a guy behind him who can swat the ball away, he just taps the ball to his wide-open teammate.
Smart play.
Bobby Portis is such a great rebounder, and he is. But this play counts as a rebound for Bobby Portis and not Brook Lopez.
He doesn't care about the stats, man.
He doesn't care about the stats. Neither should you. If the Bucks are getting the rebound, I don't give a shit if it's anybody specific.
I don't care either, really.
The Bucks are getting the rebound. I would prefer it, honestly, that Brook Lopez is getting tap-outs to guards, to Giannis, to guys who can lead the fast break. Steve said he saw a Facebook clip about Ajax being a jumper short of 100 million man. I don't remember who it was, but I remember seeing that video as well.
That's interesting. Interesting.
The other thing that I said maybe is adding a floater.
He does try them, but yeah, I agree. I think a floater would be nice for him.
Because that's something where if he's even just being respected because teams know he's going to shoot the three, that a pump fake, two dribbles, get a foot in the paint, and a floater.
Yeah. Hmm. 100 million. That's not crazy to say, actually.
I mean, I'll allow it. 5 years, 100 million?
I'll allow it.
I can see that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, but the thing about the three-pointers is he can't just hit the corner three. He has to hit the top of the key three, too. Yeah. So he can kind of be – you're not going to give $100 million to a guy who just hits corner three. That's just not going to happen. You could find any schmuck on the G League that could do that.
Dorian Finney-Smith makes corner threes, and he makes $17 million a year.
Yeah, he needs to be a top of the key three-pointer as well. Plus, if you make a top of the key three and you're talking about the floater, much more options to drive from the top of the floor.
Absolutely. Okay, so the Bucks have three more games between now and next Wednesday. They play the Nets tonight in a little over 2 hours. They play the Bulls again on Saturday in Chicago again, and then they play at the Pacers on Tuesday. So a couple divisional games in between now and then. Steve asked, was it Pat Bev that said that? I don't think it was. I don't think it was Pat Beverly. Man, it's going to bother me.
Pat Bev, bro. He brought something up the other day, and it got me hype. He said, I haven't heard no Doc Rivers slander lately. No Doc Rivers slander lately, I said. He's right. I haven't heard none either. Although, I will say, and I posted this on my personal page, the Bucks fans need to start realizing and respecting a guy named Greg Buckner that we talked about in the pregame or the primer of this season. We talked about Greg Buckner coming over from the Cavaliers. The defense is much better than it was last year. 100%. He gets a lot of credit for that.
It's even better just like looking at like the month of December.
Yeah.
I think on the season, the Bucks are, I'm going to pull it up to be exact, but I think they're like 11th in team defensive rating.
On the season?
Yeah, on the season.
Wow, interesting. I mean, they've been playing really good defense to your credit, like you've been saying the last couple of weeks. I mean, 124 versus the Cavs, but 81 versus the Thunder again. I mean, 102 versus the Hawks, 109 versus Magic. I mean, those are not bad games. 113 versus Nets. I mean, that's pretty average scoring. You're not allowing people to go for 120, 130 every night. Like, there was a lot of times last year where teams were literally just getting wide open threes, wide open layups, and it was like, Jesus, this is disgusting.
The Bucks are 12th in defensive rating.
12th, all right.
So, top half.
Definitely still.
And they are 0.04 away from being top 10.
All right. I mean, still room for improvement, obviously. I would. Mm-hmm. I'm loving top 12, though. That's tremendous.
Top 12 with this smidge of improvement away from top 10.
I love that.
You talk about a top 10 defense and probably a top 5 offense.
Kind of reminds me of the Packers a little bit, where the Packers started off the season, you know, giving up a bunch of yards to the Eagles. They give up a bunch of yards to the Vikings, which we're going to talk about tomorrow. But and then as the season kind of went on, we kind of got a little bit more comfortable with Hafley. And, you know, you've obviously seen the transformation on the Packers defense. I think the same thing can happen with the Bucs is, you know, they find people who are solidified in the rotation and they get a little bit more comfortable with this new defensive scheme. I think this defense could be really, really good, you know, at full strength.
Yeah. The Bucs are currently 12th in offensive rating as well, which when you consider the fact that Chris Middleton didn't play the first 20 games of the season and Giannis and Dame haven't played the last three games.
Yeah, Giannis has missed four games now, and I think Dame's missed three games now. Yeah. So pretty good.
They're actually tied for 11th. So,
okay. It's fair.
I think by the end of January – they'll be top 10 in both.
I'm with that. I would love that. Love nothing more than to push that agenda since they didn't get to play on Christmas Day. But, you know, it is what it is.
I will say the team that we were dogging for getting to play on Christmas Day, the 76ers, they did get a win. They did beat the Celtics on Christmas. So I guess they kind of made that worth it.
But that made me a little happy, but still.
Your team is still an absolute clown show. And the fact that nobody is talking about firing Nick Nurse is still a joke.
I agree.
Alrighty, so like Jake said, we'll be back tomorrow night to talk about Packers. We get a Friday night episode this week with Tuesday having been Christmas Eve. So tomorrow night we're going to have a recap of the Packers-Saints Monday night football game and previewing their Sunday afternoon matchup with the Minnesota Vikings. Other than that, we will be back next Wednesday. Thanks everybody for tuning in and commenting along, and we will see you guys tomorrow night and next Wednesday.